From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Tuesday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. We're going to talk with Chris Dortch for a while. Chris Dortch, the head of Blue Ribbon Yearbook, probably one of the top five most knowledgeable people about college basketball, if I had to guess, somewhere along those lines. He knows everybody. He knows potential coaches that could be the next Ole Miss head coach. He knows Andy Kennedy. So we get a good rundown on the Ole Miss situation from Chris, some overall basketball thoughts, as well as a look at the SEC heading into the NCAA tournament, where they're trying to break the record, or at least their conference record, for most bids in a season. So a lot going on with Chris here in a little bit on the show. We'll get to him soon. First, we'll tell you the show is brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon. Go get some ribs tonight if you would so choose, because there's a baseball game at 4 o'clock against Memphis. Maybe on the way home, you just want to pick them up, have them ready to go, dry or wet. Feed everybody with a couple slabs there at the Oxford Exxon. Also, Craddock Oil is the presenting sponsor of the FCA breakfast this weekend. OleMissFCA.com to get your tickets. Evan Ingram will be in the house as he is the special guest. New York Giants tight end, former Ole Miss All-American, will join for that event that's grown in popularity the last few years. Craddock Oil does a great job presenting, and the FCA people do a fabulous job of putting it on. So that is Saturday before Ole Miss and Tulane. Is there a basketball game at home Saturday too?
Yes, Tennessee noon on Saturday.
What's going to have more attendance?
Since it was the weather. Yeah. Is the baseball game getting rained out?
Maybe the breakfast even, right?
Yeah. I mean.
Anyway. All right. So that's going on with the Oxford Exxon, and it'll tell you a little bit about Clark Ford.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number, tell Corey Clark that you heard about it. Heard about him on the podcast. We'll get to that in a minute. Tell him what Ford you're looking for. It's the first thing you do. Tell him what Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. In business hours, it's simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. Corey is probably his weaknesses have built up to a point now where he's just exhausted. He's waiting for the 1st of March for a number of reasons. You can probably take advantage of that, get an even better deal from Corey. And we'll make it even better. Tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, an additional $500 off the bottom line. From Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So Ole Miss, Memphis, 4 o'clock today. Ole Miss basketball against Missouri, 8 o'clock tonight. A couple different things on those. First, Ole Miss, Houston Roth will make his first career start for the Rebels. At least I think it's his first career start. Greer Holston handled most of the midweek last year, but Roth's going to get a shot tonight. I was a little stunned by this today, the Ole Miss Analytics Twitter account. That's put out some cool information during the first week of the season. We're going to talk to the guy that is kind of responsible for some of that later in the week on the show. But Houston Roth's slider, swing and miss 61% of the time last year, was the Ole Miss pitch, meaning every pitcher's different offerings, that got the highest whiff rate amongst the staff. I would never have guessed that. I would have thought something with Feigl or Wolfolk maybe, but Houston Roth with his slider getting swing and miss 61% of the time last year for the Rebels. So gets the midweek start tonight, the Oxford native. So they play a Memphis team that swept Ole Miss last year. Ole Miss has had a good bit of trouble with the Tigers over the last few years during non-conference play. It's not going to make the season or break the season, but Ole Miss probably should win a game against them every once in a while. So, in a way, it's a big game just to keep some early season momentum going into the weekend against Tulane.
I've got the Fire Bianco message board thread ready to go.
They tried to fire Clement on Sunday.
To fire Clement on Sunday, but came back and won.
So, it's okay.
So, he lives to breathe another day, but I've got it ready. Ready to hit it.
Yeah, Ole Miss and Memphis. Memphis is throwing a kid that, I don't know, he threw 21 innings last year, beats me. But
he'll throw some stuff up there.
He'll throw some stuff up there.
Yeah.
He'll put a baseball in his hand and he'll fling it, and it'll get hit or it won't. That's kind of how it's gonna go.
It's still February. I'm not trying to belittle it, but, I mean, you'd rather win than lose, but these games are not going to determine outcomes of seasons.
Memphis is throwing left-handed pitcher Danny Dins. He was 1-1 with a 4.71 ERA in 21 innings last season.
I bet he's got a lot of slow stuff.
You think this is going to be a little backwards day for the Rebels?
Probably. And a lot of times those guys are effective.
Oh, seen it.
Left-handed, throw it kind of a little loopy.
Might want to keep your weight back a little bit.
Keep your weight
back.
Don't
put your foot down too soon.
He's going to dance around in the zone some. Keep it out of the middle of the plate.
Or he's going to walk people and get his head kicked in.
Or he'll walk people and eventually make a mistake because he has to throw a strike and someone will hit a three-run homer.
Yeah. Houston Roth last year, 3-0, 1.57 ERA for the Rebels and 28.2.
He had a real strong summer, right?
He went to the Perfect Game Collegiate League. Not a great league, but he dominated it. He developed a cutter, had a lot of strikeouts. He's one of the guys that went somewhere to improve on one thing. It's like, you know, it's a lot like minor league ball in the summer leagues. It's hey, let's do this over and over and over again. Because like a lot of guys will have Cape years where their ERAs have been fives and fans are freaking out. It's like, well, he threw 80% cutters. He didn't give a crap what they were doing against him or not doing
it's
against
not
him.
Results oriented stuff.
No, not even a little bit. So
it's yeah, like you go to a A ball game, even up to double A, they don't give a damn about outcome. I mean, zero. But you're like A ball, low A. Total development, man. I mean, it's all right. Here's what we're going to do today. You're going to throw 50 pitches. 40 of them are going to be fastballs. We don't really give a damn. Throw a few this, a few that, but we're going, and then at 50, we're coming to get you. And that's that. And then we're going to go to this guy, and he's going to throw 20. He's going to throw 20.
And a lot of guys, they'll throw starters in relief in low ball because it gets them out there more just trying to build the innings up rather than trying to run them out every 6 day because their pitch counts aren't going to be huge anyway. So just let them keep piling up 30 pitch appearances and see where it is. But no, yeah, I mean, a low A coach could get fired a lot quicker screwing up development than losing baseball games.
But a guy like Roth, he could end up being huge for a team like this if he could turn into the fourth starter. Because, you know, you get into
a lot of four-starter options. It's kind of ridiculous right now. But
you get into an NCAA deal, and
if you had to run him out there, you'd feel all right.
Sometimes you can screw up one of those first two games, as Ole Miss and every other major team has ever seen.
You can screw that up
and have to come back the other way.
This team has six legitimate starters. They've got the three weekend starters, and they've got Roth, Holston, and Etheridge that easily could start in a number of different varieties. My personal opinion, there was a huge message board thread about this earlier in the week, and it was valid. I think it was more to it because it's not in a vacuum. I do think Will Etheridge ends up getting starts at some point this season. He's dynamic. Just talking with David DeLucci yesterday for David's story. It's up on rebelgrove.com. Glad to have him back in year two as an analyst for the site. He thinks Etheridge might have the second best stuff on the team behind Rollison, and I've got a hunch here. And this is just me thinking that MacArthur probably has some pressure on him. He's a guy that's had an ERA in the fours 2 years in a row. He's got tons of talent. Everything's there from a measurable standpoint that Mike Bianco likes. And he wasn't bad Sunday by any stretch. But fastball command was a little off. Pitch count got a little up. Just wasn't particularly sharp. Etheridge could be an easy guy to slip in, and it's that debatable thing. You and I have talked about it a little yesterday, and fans love to debate it. If you have a shutdown, high-leverage, multi-inning reliever, are you better off moving him into that third starting spot to maybe avoid the high leverage? Do you leave him? Because Ole Miss right now maybe has the number one bullpen in the country. They're electric in multiple ways. They're deep. They're so good. And MacArthur isn't bad. And it's Sunday, and it's what it is. It might be an improvement on Sunday. You move Etheridge in, probably would be an improvement, frankly. He's probably be better than MacArthur. But I think
how much do you weaken your pen?
Well, considerably. Because I don't think MacArthur is a pen guy. I think you'd have to move MacArthur to midweek because it takes him a couple innings to get started. He does not present a profile to me as a bullpen guy. So if that's the case, you're almost kind of losing an arm to do that.
Maybe this is me as a Major League Baseball guy who watches a lot of Major League Baseball. So I'll acknowledge that up front, okay? Boy, those deep bullpens are so valuable, especially as you get into postseason. And so much of college baseball resembles the postseason because it's a weekend. Mm-hmm. college baseball teams don't play seven games a week or six games a week. It's a midweek game and then this huge weekend series.
Yeah.
And so it's much, I think the comparison I'm making is apt.
Yeah.
God, when you've got that bullpen that can give you five innings.
Well, and they've got so many guys that I think they're going to stress other teams out in the current thing because, hey, if you don't have the lead by the fifth, this bitch is over.
That's what I'm saying. So you're not really asking MacArthur to be a traditional starter. You're not really saying, hey, listen, can you give me seven every Sunday? Now, if he gives you seven, you're like, hey, great job, buddy.
Yeah, because he's going to do that a couple times.
But that's not really what you're asking him to do. You're saying, hey, can you get us into the fifth in a one-run game? And then we're going to – their bullpen's not as good as ours. We'll close the door with ours, and we'll beat up on the tired carcass of theirs. And we'll win Sunday games in the eighth and ninth innings, and the kids will run the bases, and everybody will be happy. But, I mean, that's the deal. I just think if you weaken your bullpen, then all of a sudden you're kind of like those other teams where on your Sunday afternoon, your tired carcass of a bullpen gets beat up a little bit. If you have a deep bullpen as a strength, I think you don't pull from that strength unless you absolutely have to. In other words, an injury would require me to do it. As long as MacArthur can keep me in games on Sunday, I roll that way.
His only element that, and look, this is kind of a strange take, but his only element that I don't necessarily like for being Sunday is that Sundays do kind of become so momentum days and offensive days that his slow starts put you in a weird hole early, potentially. If he gives up three or four in the first three, and even if he hangs around for a couple more innings, you're just kind of battling from behind on a day that's strange. It's the getaway day for major leagues, and everything's a little more weird on those days.
Sure.
So that's the only deal. But I don't know. I think Etheridge ends up starting, but it's a gamble because right now – they've got Wolfolk and Etheridge and Stokes, and Jordan Fowler is going to be really good. I mean, they've got guys that can go multi-innings back there and be able to not be tired at any point in the weekend. And when that thing gets to the seventh, the other team looks in the dugout and goes, we're in trouble here. And
sure.
They are. So
sure.
I don't know.
But how many SEC teams of the 14, how many of them have a dynamic Sunday starter if they go traditionally with your ace and then your second guy?
Oh, I mean, from a talent standpoint, MacArthur's probably the number three or four Sunday starter in the league. He was a Friday night guy last year.
Yeah, I roll that way.
I mean, he threw eight shutout innings against Arkansas in Fayetteville last year.
I roll that way until it just doesn't work.
Yeah, you have to give him the opportunity to lose the job anyway. I mean you're not just going to start tinkering to tinker.
I look at teams like the Yankees, the Indians, the Dodgers that have those shutdown bullpens. They loom out there. They affect the other team's psyche, their mindset, the way that you approach. They make you press a little bit in the third and fourth inning. Mm-hmm. Hey, we got two on and nobody out here. Oh, God, we've got to get three or four because I know what's coming. And then you only get one, and you're like, oh, boy, that was a missed opportunity. And now you're tight a little bit because
– yeah, that second time the top of the order comes up.
Yeah.
They go, oh, hey, got to move.
Here because – we know what's coming.
Because in college baseball, you've got a wasted inning with the bottom of the order a lot of times. So it's, hey, we're only going to get one more chance.
Right.
And they're going to have Etheridge in by then.
And so you're pressing.
Yeah.
And it's mental.
So
we'll see. Unless you roll out a bunch of baseball robots. And then it's a different deal. Because they don't think.
But how he manages some of these guys is going to be very interesting because he's got Roth and Holston that both could be very, very legitimate starters. They can throw them in the midweek. They've got, again, I think they're going to stretch Fowler out some, even though him in the bullpen makes so much sense because he gives them a left-handed option when they just don't have another one. So, you all right over there?
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Neil's laughing at the message board this morning. That's where
there was one post that just cracked me up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
Go ahead.
I'm good. If you're
give me some credit, man. How long did we talk just then? About 15 minutes?
13:51.
We just talked 13:51. We haven't gotten to a major story that's out there, and I just talked 13 minutes, and I think I did fairly intelligently on a baseball team that I've yet to see. I will go see them, and I will watch them play. But we haven't even gotten to the big story out there. I talked yesterday a little bit about what Andy Cannizzaro might be doing yesterday on the heels of a sweep in Hattiesburg. Turns out I was dead wrong.
Well, I mean, we could do the number one radio platform in the state and talk NBA this morning, but we'll pass.
Yeah, today we break down the Utah Jazz. The Jazz winners of 11 in a row, Donovan Mitchell, won the slam dunk competition, and they appear to have benefited in some ways from the loss of Rodney Hood, and they're pushing in the Western Conference.
No, you can't mention Rodney Hood. That gets back into state. We could get pulled over.
No, forgive me. Rudy Gobert, a real defensive presence at the rim. Stop.
Yeah, Andy Canizero out at Mississippi State, 24/7 breaking the story last night at some point. A lot of rumors going on yesterday. Even my phone was ringing a lot, and I thought, this might be something going on here, because it got really specific about 8 o'clock last night. It did not have anything to do with the Bulldogs' 0-3 start after a sweep at the hands of Southern Miss at P. Taylor Park in Hattiesburg over the weekend. And if any indication that we're hearing is accurate, thoughts with his family. It has a lot of Hugh Freeze elements to this, and it sucks. I mean, it's really kind of the only way to go about this. From a baseball standpoint, which is fairly irrelevant right now, Gary Henderson's going to take over, the former Kentucky head coach. He's the pitching coach at Mississippi State. He'll keep it somewhat in the middle of the road, and they'll see where they go. But for the players, for the state community, tough blow right now. It's I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm
not making light of the situation by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. Just.
I wonder about timing a little bit. I wonder what's happened in the last 5 to 7 days to create the timing element of this in the first week of the season, but otherwise, and I don't know that the state's supposed to make some announcements today, so we'll see what John Cohen comes out with. And they've got to play a game tonight, I guess. Tomorrow night, probably. I don't know. I haven't looked at their schedule, but
they run the risk of – I mean, I feel bad for the players. I'm sorry. I know that.
Oh, man.
I do. That's a lot to handle. They're not very good. They have some pitching injuries, as we discussed yesterday. And now you throw this in there, and no one's going to feel sorry for you in this league. No one's going to let up.
You think it could have a Andy Kennedy element to it?
Oh, I think they could become a free spot.
Do you really?
Yeah. I'll tell you why I think this. Now, you know me. I'm a jerk. If John Cohen thought this was a good team.
We talked about this.
If John Cohen, who's a really good coach, whether you like John Cohen, dislike John Cohen, whatever. John Cohen's very good.
Yeah.
If John Cohen, who knows baseball, thought this was a really good team, I think he'd put the hat on.
I think he'd run back out there and put the jersey on.
He's already hired a football coach. Now, there's a chance he's got to do a basketball thingy here soon, because I'm going to tell you this, howling rumors out there.
Yeah, can the AD coach baseball?
Yeah. It's an emergency.
You've got a former head coach on your staff.
I'm just saying. They were really good. He'd be like, you know, I could do this.
A little legacy here. Let's go win a West title.
Barry Alvarez did it. I could do it.
He did.
Come on, you don't practice baseball all day. Don't practice baseball all day. You don't.
I'm not going to recruit.
No, other people are going to recruit. I'm still going to conduct a coaching search. I'm not going to be at the baseball program all day.
I can make some meetings in the morning.
He doesn't have to run the strength and conditioning program. I mean, I'm not making fun of college baseball, but, I mean, it is not 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You're not watching film all night. Right?
I mean, they watch film, but yeah.
But you're not watching film till midnight.
Yeah, no.
And you're not the one watching the damn film. The hitting coach is watching the film. The pitching coach is watching the film.
Yeah. You probably have a report on your desk in the morning, and you read it and move on with your day.
Yeah. I'm not belittling the judge. I'm just saying he could do it, sure. You could send somebody else out to the Bulldog Club function in Laurel or whatever to raise some coin. Or reschedule it for the day that it's an off day. You don't practice every day.
Instead, he's going to tell Gary to go do it.
Yeah. You go handle it. I'll give you.
And you know, we talked about this. If you thought he was really good, it created a situation because you got a former SEC head coach taking over the reins. What if they go win 38 games? You're hiring Gary Henderson.
Yeah. I don't like their chances based on the early returns, but yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So, anyway.
It's undefeated.
What's that?
Yep.
Podcast brought to you in part by, let's do Master Cuts, Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773 is the phone number, mastercutslawn.com.
The Utah Jazz, ladies and gentlemen.
Get your yard fixed up. Temperature's in the 70s today, so it might be sooner than you think when you need a little help with lawn and landscape, and they'll hook you up. You should go sign an annual contract. You mentioned the podcast. First Cut is free with Master Cuts. They can go build your deck, your outdoor living area, fences, pergolas, and more there with Master Cuts. 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by the Toronto Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, and company. They're ready to go. You can hear more about that at Bow Bounds, the Bow Bounds Show. Breaking down the Eastern Conference race here on Tuesday, February the 20th. Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, he challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a call, go to Google, read Romero Miller State Farm reviews. Romero Miller State Farm. 662-893-1212. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Rebel for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys, with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state. Gambrell and Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
Now, Chris Dortch on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
Chris, thanks for joining us here on the show. Really appreciate your time. I know this is a really busy time of the year for you. You'll be at Florida, Tennessee tomorrow night in Knoxville. We'll get to the Gators and some of that in a minute. First, obviously the big story here, Andy Kennedy steps down, effective immediately. Your reaction to that development and just kind of your thoughts on the legacy that Andy Kennedy leaves after almost 12 seasons in Oxford.
Well, you know, I've gotten to know Andy well and consider him a friend. And every summer for every year that he was there, 12 in all, we spoke on the phone for my Blue Ribbon story. And I found him always to be a thoughtful, intelligent, quotable guy that measured his words carefully and seemed to understand his role with the media and presenting his program. And I think he did a good job. And I think most people that understand even in a scintilla of basketball would say the same. It's a difficult program. You and I talked about this off the air many times. I think just this year they got to the 500 mark all time in basketball. And of course, now they're back below it. That's all time in 110 years. So it shows you that the program hasn't had sustained success. There have been pockets of success, you know, certainly. And he was a big part of that. And if you look at some milestones, he's been there. And, you know, what was he in postseason, 9 of his 12 years? And one of the years he wasn't, Chris Warren got hurt. And I think they would have had he not. So I think he did about as well as could be expected. Now, do coaches wear out their welcome? Absolutely they do. I think he'll be the first to tell you that. And I think the fact that he resigned and said he was going to work out the season and then changed his mind less than a week later, I think is proof of that. You know, he understands that his situation now is through and it's detrimental to the program, so he said. So they're looking for a new direction. And he left that program a lot better than he found it. And now they've got a practice facility. Now they've got a great new arena. And, you know, he'll leave it to somebody else. I shed no tears for my friend, though, because I believe that, well, in addition, he'll walk away with a buyout. But I think he'll get a job right away if he wants it. If he doesn't, he can sit out and do ESPN for a while because he'd be excellent at that. And I think he'll be on somebody's sidelines again. And I wish him all the best.
Along those lines, and I agree with you, I think Andy's going to take a few weeks and hang out at a beach and rest his mind a little bit, and then he'll evaluate some decisions. I talked to some coaches. You talked to tons of coaches. You know almost all of the coaches. You won't say that, but I will. It's true. Coaches, especially basketball coaches, gossip as much as any profession out there. There is a lot of speculation, gossip, that kind of thing, that this FBI story, Pete Thamel had an update with Yahoo, I guess it was last week, that this thing is going to mushroom into this sport-changing development. Do you hear that when you talk to other coaches, and do you think that's exaggeration at this point, or do you think that could indeed be what's coming?
You know, as far as sport-altering, that may be a little extreme, but I do think that the game will be affected. And I think it'll be affected in a positive way. I don't know every coach, but I know a lot, and I've spoken to a lot, and a lot of my friends in the media too, guys that I really respect, like Fran Fraschilla and Seth Greenberg and people like that. And there's no question that this will affect the game of college basketball. And for those out there who think it's a sport totally run by desperados and thieves and cutthroats, it's not true. Most coaches, in fact, don't alter the rules, don't cheat. I don't think Andy Kennedy altered any rules to recruit. I don't think Mark Fox does. I know Rick Barnes doesn't. I know Mark Fox does. We've talked about it. So I think some of that is left to a select few schools that deal in the, and I'll say this, cesspools of where greed and corruption intersect. And that is adults trying to make money off the backs of young, innocent kids. I say innocent, they're probably complicit in accepting things, but they're doing as they're taught. And some kids that are, you know, from impoverished situations, if somebody throws money in their face, what do you think they're going to do? So I think that this, the fear that somebody may be listening in on a cell phone call, I think will be a deterrent to a lot of this. I think some of the names that are going to come down, I don't want to rumor mong, but, you know, from what I hear, there are a couple that will knock your socks off. And if that happens, it will fundamentally change the game. I don't think, again, hyperbole being what it is, I don't think the game is as corrupt at all levels as the average fan might think. I think it's at a higher level. And I think it has to do with AAU coaches. I think the demise of the high school coach as a key influence in a player's life has been a detriment. And schools, I just wrote a piece for the Fieldhouse, Seth Davis's new site on Coach Rick Byrd at Belmont. And he and his staff explained to me that they only recruit through the high school coach because they want to really, truly get to know a player. And so for a lot of programs, especially mid-majors, this isn't going to affect anything. But what I hope it'll do is level the playing field out even more than some rule changes have done. I think the shot clock leveled the playing field. The three-pointer certainly did. The emphasis on fouling certainly has. But this will level it out even more, and people will have to fight fair. And I think the FBI's involvement is because, you know, this has gotten to the point of corruption and bribery and things that are against federal laws. And so it scared me at first because I love the game and I hate to see it tainted. But I think in the long run, it'll be the best thing, and it'll shake down, and the game will be cleaner, and there'll be less of these backroom deals and whisperings and wink winks, and the game will be a better place.
Yeah, if what I hear, it's not only gonna knock your socks off, it's gonna rock the chalk off your socks, if you will.
Well said, sir.
All right, let's talk about some of the names that pop up for Ole Miss. You're going to see Florida tomorrow night. I think you and I are on the same page here, but I'm going to let our listeners hear this. Obviously, for obvious reasons and for understandable reasons, Ole Miss people are very interested in the prospect of Mike White coming back to Ole Miss as the head coach. It makes a ton of sense. Mike's a great guy. It's one of those deals where I shoot it down, and people think that I'm being negative. I'm not being negative. I would love nothing more than for Mike White to be the head coach at Ole Miss. It makes my job easy. I already know Mike. We wouldn't have to build a relationship. We already have one. It would be super easy to do. He's great with media, all of those things. So it's not me saying I don't want this to happen. It'd be super easy. I don't necessarily buy the logic in it. You're around it a lot more. Florida is very much – has played their way down to the bubble. They have some key injuries. I don't know that they're going to get those guys back in time. They might actually play their way out of the tournament. There is some angst in that Florida fan base, as there would be with any fan base, when a team that opens a season with top 10 expectations doesn't make the tournament. Just your thoughts on Mike White, where he is at Florida. If you put any stock at all into the rumors that Mike White to Ole Miss might actually be a tangible thing.
Well, you know, I've learned in this business never to say never. I like Mike White. I think he's a great guy and a great coach, and I thought he was an exceptional hire for Florida. Now, there's a couple things at play. You're right. They have begun to play their way back toward the bubble, and it's a scary thing. I don't think they have to worry just yet, but I got a tough game at Tennessee, which, as you said, I'll be at tomorrow night. And, you know, it kind of starts there. If they want to start going back up the ladder, they need to win that game. Of course, Tennessee has been formidable at home. And, you know, they've gotten spanked on the road on successive Saturdays. And they feel like they've got to get back and have a statement win. So it's going to be a tall order for Florida. So there's a new AD, Scott Strickland, at Florida now, too. And, you know, maybe Mike feels some heat, but I think that anybody that gives him that heat doesn't understand. They've been without John Egbunu the whole year, and I don't know when they will get him back. He tore his ACL last year. The injury has had some attendant meniscus problems. And when the kid tries to work out, I understand that there's some swelling, and he's just not ready. Some guys can bounce back from ACL in less than 6 months, and others, like a Derrick Rose or somebody, it just wrecks their career. And I don't know if that's the case with Egbunu, but certainly a guy that can rebound and block shots for this team is missed because they struggle to defend on a consistent basis. And he's a guy that, if you're going to play Matador defense on the perimeter, you got to have a mistake eraser in the middle, and he was that. They've also got a good recruiting class coming in, so I don't think he's in any imminent danger at all. Again, I think he's an excellent coach. Now, I don't blame Ole Miss fans for wanting him. A lot of people always think that, hey, you know, so-and-so, this is his alma mater, he'll come back. And loyalty only goes so deep. You know, when you already have a good job and you're making a lot of good money, it was sort of an anomaly that Jamie Dixon left Pitt to go to TCU, his alma mater. But that program was, you know, in bad shape, and he got out ahead of the posse. So it doesn't happen all that much. Mike obviously can't antagonize or alienate anybody at Ole Miss. He loves the place. He went to school there. He started there for 4 years. And so he's not going to say anything that would make anybody angry. But I think he's staying put. And Florida would be stupid if they let this little rough patch here, especially without John Igbunu, affect his future there.
Take a break in our conversation with Chris Dortch to tell you the podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Seto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting and understand your market, a big deal there. Also, you get the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. It is the place to go for all of your Nissan needs. They've got all the new 2018s, lots of previously owned Nissans with great deals on those, and then super lease deals at Grenada Nissan. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about it on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And the podcast brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for, and then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Chris Dortch on the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Steve Forbes at East Tennessee is going to sign a contract extension, has agreed to one at East through 2023. I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that that's not something that's necessarily going to stop him from landing a high major job.
Well, from what I understand, and, you know, I know a lot of people in the administration there because that's happened to be where I went to college. They know what their limitations are, but they really stepped up, and the deal, when all is said and done, amounts to $650,000 a year, which for that level of Division I basketball is really big time. And what it was done was to eliminate the nuisance offers. Hey, Charlotte's open. We're paying $700,000 or $800,000. East Carolina's open. We're paying $1 million, but you know, those are tough places, tough leagues. Conference USA, because it's a 14-team one-bid league. The American, because, you know, you're staring up at so many teams, you know, Wichita State, Cincinnati, Temple, Connecticut. It's a tough, tough gig. So that contract was put in place. He's got a $500,000 buyout now, but that's a pittance compared to what he could make. I think if a job like Ole Miss came open, he'd strongly consider it, if not just take it. And again, I went to East Tennessee State. It would break my heart for him to leave, but he's also a good friend. And, you know, professionally, you know, you don't want to stand in anybody's way, and he wouldn't be stupid enough to not consider an Ole Miss anyway. And I think he'll leave the program in good hands with his top assistant, Jason Shea. I'm going to tell you this right now, for anybody that's listening, that you know, I've been following basketball all my life and covering it for years, 40 years. And I put out a book like Blue Ribbon, 650,000 words. You got to be a kook to do that. And so after a while, you learn a little bit about the game. Steve Forbes is the best choice for Ole Miss. Now, is he going to win the press conference? He will once he gets to the podium. But before that, you know, people might say, who is this guy? Well, look around the league and see how many coaches came from mid-majors. I remember having this argument with a caller on a radio show right after Tennessee hired Bruce Pearl. I'm like, where do you think these coaches come from? Just watch and see if I'm not right. And you know, he's proven it at two places that he's an exceptional coach in this league. I think, you know, Steve Forbes worked for Bruce. He learned a lot from Bruce. Unfortunately, his association with Bruce cost him a little bit when Bruce got fired and Steve got hit with a show cost. But I'm here to tell you that that is nothing to worry about. Steve Forbes is not a cheater. He doesn't have to resort to that. He's an excellent coach. And he got his doctorate degree, as he puts it, working for Wichita State and Greg Marshall, who's one of the best coaches in the country. He is tough yet fair. He's a player's coach. He demands intensity on the defensive end. There's no negotiating that. But he will, if you'll guard, he'll give you some freedom. His team shoot a lot of threes. They like to get downhill on you and get to the rim. They like to run. They like to have fun. And the other thing he's good at is procuring talent quickly from all sources. And that's what it's going to take at Ole Miss. Let's be honest. You're not going to out-recruit Kentucky at Ole Miss. Andy Kennedy did as good a job as he could with getting, you know, D1 transfers, graduate transfers, JUCO transfers, whatever freshman he could add to the mix. You know, weren't a ton of four stars, and did he ever sign a five-star? I
no.
Remember one.
No.
So he did a good job considering that. And this is how you have to build it at Ole Miss. And this is Steve Forbes' forte. Nobody outworks him at JUCO. When he got fired along with Bruce Pearl at Tennessee, he went to Northwest Florida. In 2 years there, from total scratch, he built two teams that went all the way to the National Junior College Championship game. 2 years in a row, from scratch, you know. So he knows how to put teams together. He started out from scratch at ETSU and with a combination of grad transfers. He's had a good one every year. D1 transfers. Some good in-state recruiting. He's got a kid now named Bo Hodges who was the best player in Tennessee last year. He was able to get it. I think he'll get his share of good high school players from Mississippi, which, as you know, is fertile. And I think he'll rule the Jukes like he always does. And I think he'll use his connections to get D1 transfers. And he'll blend them all together, which is his best thing. He's an alchemist that just can do that in a short amount of time. And I think he's the best. If I were the AD at Ole Miss, my search would begin and end with Steve Forbes.
Last thing, I know you have some
Did
stuff
I say
to
that
do.
In certain enough tones?
You were pretty emphatic. I'm almost to the point where I think it's a I hate saying this because someone at Ole Miss could come back to me and say you have no way of knowing that, and they would be right because I really haven't talked to anyone at Ole Miss yet about it because it's still awfully new. I don't think there's a lot of names there because I think we kind of may have just covered the list to a degree. I mean, people talk about Kermit Davis, and this is no knock on Kermit.
Yep.
It's just that Kermit's older. I don't know that makes a ton of sense. He built Middle Tennessee, but he built Middle Tennessee methodically, and I don't know that he would have. Yep. I don't know that he has time to come to Oxford and build Ole Miss methodically. That's no knock on Kermit. He's done a great job at Middle, and they might be the best non-Power 5 school in the country right now. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. You hear Tom Crean. I hear Thad Mata, though if I'm Ole Miss or any other school, I would have a lot of hesitancy about Thad Mata just because of his health. He's a very good coach. He did a fantastic job at Ohio State, but he would still be the head coach at Ohio State if he had not had a health issue, and I would be concerned just – I'm not trying to be calloused. I would just be concerned about his health going forward. If he took a job like Ole Miss, a hard boots on the ground job, if he took that job, would his body be able to hold up 2-3 years? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he would, but if I'm a Ross Bjork or someone, I'd have to be awfully damn certain that he was completely healthy before I went down that route.
Yeah, it's another situation, too, like Ben Holland at Mississippi State. I mean, their fans are probably wondering when he's going to slip out the door. I've heard rumors that even after just 2 years, Kevin Stallings might have worn out his work. Like Pitt, the attendance is so bad that even though he's owed a big buyout, it would probably cost them money not to make a decision at this point. And that's no knock on Kevin. He's a good coach, another friend that I've known for years, and I think a good guy. But that was a meat grinder of a job. Jamie Dixon wouldn't have left it if it weren't. He knew it was on the way down, and it was a different program after it left the Big East for the ACC. That's a tough neighborhood in the ACC. So, you know, what if Ben Howland goes back there? It's a similar situation if you look at a Tom Crean or a Thad Matta. And here's another thing, Neil, that I used to didn't think this mattered, but geography is important. Past experience is important. Knowing the lay of the land, having built relationships with high school coaches and JUCO coaches and AAU coaches in a particular region. You know, there's no better example than, you know, Kim Anderson was a successful coach. He gets to Missouri, couldn't get it done. They cut him loose after 3 years and bring in Konzo Martin. Konzo Martin's career record is just a little bit over 60%. He's a good coach. He hasn't set the woods on fire. But geographically, the fit for him at Mizzou was perfect. You know, he's from East St. Louis, Illinois. You know, that's a talent-rich area. He was smart enough to hire the Porter brothers' dad on his staff. He was already on the staff at Washington, and Michael was committed there, and Jonte probably would have gone too. But, you know, he gets those two. Then from out of East St. Louis, his hometown, Isaiah Tillman, and signed with Illinois. John Gross gets fired. Missouri gets him. You know, he's a 6'10", knows where his bread is buttered postman, who's going to be a star in the SEC. So that quickly, they go from a 20-loss team to a team that's going to get in the NCAA tournament. Geographics, knowing the lay of the land. And I'm telling you, Steve Forbes knows the South. He knows, this is particularly important in Mississippi that has a great junior college athletic program. And in Florida, where Steve is recruited. And Texas, you know, that's particularly important in the South. If you're not going to be able to get five stars every year like Kentucky does. So nobody's going to beat Steve Forbes and the Jukes, and nobody's going to outwork him in recruiting. And I think he's become a really good X and O guy too. So I would urge anybody that has decision-making power, this is an easy hire to me. It's simple. You just call Steve Forbes and he'll come. Because he wants to test himself at the highest level. And he'll come somewhat reluctantly because he's built a program at ETSU. He's one player away, a kid from the Dominican Republic, that they're still recruiting. I think next year they could be a Gonzaga-like team. He'd be leaving a lot there. But, you know, for a job like Ole Miss, for a coach like Steve Forbes, it's too good a fit for him to pass up, and I think it's too good a fit for the school to pass up.
Last thing, I know you're busy. Just a quick thought as we get closer to March. The SEC's really solid this year. There's no great team. There's only one team that has sort of imploded and is not a good team right now, and that's Ole Miss, obviously. Everybody else is sort of, frankly, kind of the same a little bit, at least to me. When you look at this league – projecting into March, is there a team or two that you think could make a run, or is this going to be a year that the league gets six or seven teams in but nobody really does much?
Oh, that's a real good question, Neil, and I was talking to Mike Trangisi about it. You know, he's the SEC's he's been an excellent resource for the SEC to call on for men's basketball, and he's helped dictate a lot of positive changes in the league. And we were talking about the relative worth of a league. And, you know, even in a year when the SEC has elevated its play and has a lot of good teams, you hear some of these pundits say, but, yeah, they're a really good team. Well, Mike says, if you use that measuring stick, there'd be a lot of leagues that aren't very good. If the measuring stick is, well, how many teams have you got to win a national championship? I don't know that there are any there. But like Mike said, and I agree, I've said this for years, to me, the worth of a league is its strength top to bottom. And, you know, last year the SEC got five in. Who would have predicted that three would end up in the Elite Eight and that South Carolina would advance all the way to the Final Four? So is there a great team that could win it all? I don't think so. But is there a team that could get on a roll? I absolutely think so. I think Florida, you know, has proven, and it can prove again, that it can play with anybody. I think Kentucky's best basketball is still ahead. I think Tennessee is a dangerous team, especially depending on matchups. If they don't face a team that has quality depth in its front line right out of the box or in a couple of rounds, they could go to the Sweet 16. Auburn could get on a roll with the way they shoot the ball. Arkansas is starting to play better and has great guard play, and in Daniel Gafford, one of the best young big men in the country. So there are some teams that can do it. Texas A&M has talent, and if they blunder their way in after struggling out of the gate in conference play. So, yeah, I think there's some teams that can do some damage, and I think it's a new era in the SEC, and I don't think there's any coincidence why that's so. Mike Trangisi has brought about some changes. Personnel has been hired. An associate commissioner actually knows basketball, a new director of officials, an edict that you have to play teams with no more than an average of 175 in the RPI. That's helped this league tremendously. So this is a better league than it was 2-3 years ago, and I think it's on a roll, and it'll continue to stay that way.
Well, my man, I really appreciate the time. Be safe getting to and from Knoxville tomorrow night, and I look forward to visiting with you again soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, brother. See you.
See you.
Thanks to Chris. Great stuff. There is he definitely knows his college basketball and gives a pretty strong case for Steve Forbes, the head coach at East Tennessee State. Podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com. They're in Holly Springs, 662-252-2321. You can head on over to the website, fill out the forms for some different medications, including sildenafil that you may need. They will call the doctor, they'll get the prescription ready, and even deliver it to you wherever you are. Also now, great service in Oxford with G&M Pharmacy. They deliver local as well. So wherever you are, Oxford or Holly Springs, great service, TysonDrugs.com.
Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. As we mentioned, Ole Miss in Tennessee, Saturday at noon at the Pavilion. Tickets available, olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Ole Miss and Missouri tonight at 8 o'clock at Mizzou Arena, I believe, right?
I think that's right.
Mizzou Arena?
I think that's right.
For some reason, I feel like that's correct. The Antlers will be in attendance, their student section.
Yes.
Gave the arm
on. Only 9 points.
So I was going to tell you, it opened at 10, and it's actually been bet down to 8.5 by a couple books. It's being bet down.
Oof.
What do they know, Neil? What do they know?
I mean this respectfully, but I'd have to lay them.
They're bettors, though, coming in on Ole Miss? What's causing it?
Let down, maybe.
I'm pulling it up.
Tuesday night, Ole Miss.
But isn't Missouri coming off a loss?
Well, it's just hard to get up day after day after day, and they're probably a little beat up.
Okay, here's the strange part. You ready?
Yeah.
The line is going down, even though Missouri has 69% of the money on them. 69% of the money on Missouri. 144 is the over-under, 57 to 43 over to under. That's pretty standard. Most people bet over just because. Predicted score via Odd Shark is 79-61 is the estimated score for Odd Shark, 18 points.
Yeah, so that's that feels more right to me.
So they say that it's a good value to pick the Tigers tonight. Gabe DeArmond will be in attendance. He'll send us some video from the proceedings of Tony Madlock as he takes over the interim gig for Ole Miss for the next few games that will end some point in St. Louis, back in Missouri here in a few weeks. So
won't be long.
Feels like everybody's just pulling on the string at this point, but
everybody kind of said all the right things except Brian Tyree yesterday.
He gave a very intelligent answer, I thought.
He gave a lot of intelligent answers and admitted that there were issues, trust issues. Some players needed some more positive reinforcement, didn't get it. Pressed, admitted that they went into the season knowing it was tournament or bust.
Shocked.
I'll say it for the gazillionth time.
A lot of elements at play here in a lot of ways, isn't it?
You can defend the decision not to roll the contract over if you would like. That makes you happy. The process in which that was handled was poor. Did that cause this season? No. No. Did it fuel it? Yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, it is what it is. People go, well, Neil, they're bad. See, he made the right decision. That is way too simplistic a thought process. You're entitled to that thought process if that makes you happy. I would argue that that is way too linear in thought and that real life doesn't work in a linear fashion like that.
State does not play baseball tonight. Just kind of looking at the schedule. I don't know when they play next. I'll look at that in a second.
Saw where Will Salmon tweeted just a minute ago that the State players were told around 7:30 this morning that Ken Azzaro is out. The pitching coach, Gary Henderson, is the interim.
Yeah. Not much on the docket tonight for SEC baseball. Actually, Memphis Ole Miss might be the best game in the league. The Lipscomb Bisons, Neil, play Tennessee. North Florida, South Carolina is not terrible. There's not much. If you're borderline psychotic, Georgia State plays Auburn tonight, so you could watch Georgia State in midweek games 2 weeks prior to Ole Miss playing them in midweek games to get a look at the Panthers pitching staff.
I look forward to that.
Turn it on from beautiful Plainsman Park, and it's just a thought I had. Auburn, they built Plainsman Park, and I like it a lot. It's cozy. It's nice.
It's nice.
But they built it right before the Super Stadium splurge. So it went obsolete in like 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the press box has like 3 seats. It's just
way too small.
Yeah. The wall's kind of cool in left field, different things. But
yeah, there's some coolness to it. I like Auburn. It's a quaint campus, and I kind of like it. But they've got that new arena. Jordan Hare's a dinosaur that they have been able to upgrade in a way that makes it appealing.
It's a very big dinosaur at this point.
It's a big dinosaur with some modern features.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking Jordan Hare. I kind of like it, honestly.
They put some bells and whistles on it.
They did. And it you can do that with football, but with baseball, it's – I don't know what they're drawing, if they ever draw anymore. I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Because when I was covering Auburn, that was a long time ago. Baseball was a big deal, and it's just not a big deal there anymore.
Yeah, is this right? State plays according to D1 Baseball's schedule, let me put it that way, because something Ole Miss I don't think would ever do. State plays a road game at Jackson State tomorrow night.
Seems like I saw that they were playing in Jackson.
Okay. Is it in Pearl and they're just the designated road team?
I don't know. When you go to that media market down there, it's one of those deals where it's just there's so much attention. I think it's cool that they're going to the site of the primary sports talk show in the state.
Radio, Neil. Radio show.
Yeah.
There was a designation.
So it was the biggest radio show?
That's something. I don't know.
Okay.
My problem is I just searched Mississippi State baseball on Google, and I'm getting a lot of news alerts. I'm having a hard time finding the schedule. Is the last 12 hours have created a bit of here I've got it, a bit of backlog on the the Google site. Yeah, at Jackson State.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they go to Corpus Christi, Texas, and play UC Santa Barbara Friday at 2 p.m. The Gauchos. Hosted a regional a couple years ago, the Gauchos.
Yeah.
They played at Lake Elsinore, like way up, like way away from their campus.
Yeah, I remember that.
I seem to recall that. All right, I'm trying to think. Anything as we close? Let's see. Baker Mayfield went after the University of Texas yesterday. We didn't even talk about that.
Really? What did he do?
You didn't see that?
No.
I'll find his quote. Hold on. Let's see. Gosh, my phone is blowing up.
I'm sure it is.
It's fairly ridiculous in the last.
What are you supposed to add? What can you tell the people that can't find elsewhere?
I just want to talk about it, I think. All right. Baker Mayfield's quote yesterday and during a news conference. You come to Oklahoma to beat Texas. I was born and raised in Austin. They didn't recruit me. I grew up 15 miles from their campus. I can't stand them. Anything they do, I don't care. I talked to the NFL guys, and they said I need to calm it down a little bit. But when it comes to Texas, absolutely not. No. End of story. And he walked off the podium after end of story and left the room.
Wow. That's anger.
Okay. Baker's our boy and Jeffrey earmuffs. By giving that hard of a quote, aren't you proving that you do, in fact, care?
Yes.
You're not really being truthful in yourself when you say, I don't care, when I go out of my way to give a negative quote about the Longhorns.
Yes. You are resentful of the fact that they did not recruit you.
Just a little.
And it didn't work out for them either. You endear yourself to Oklahoma even more.
Take some shots at Texas, all good.
Yeah, but you're revealing that you're still deep down a little pissed about it. What if that fuels you? Okay. I like Mayfield. He could be my guy. I'm telling you, if you told me that he had a strong NFL career, I don't bat an eye.
Braves' first spring training game Friday is against Mookie Callaway and the Mets, I see. Wherever that's at, just in front of me on ESPN.com at the moment.
So. It's that time of year. It's here.
It is. So.
Everybody's starting to sign. J.D. Martinez signed. The rumor is Jake Arrieta's got a couple of deals that are getting close. Everybody's getting done, getting in camp.
Except Lance Lynn.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. It's probably going to work out because some team will have an injury and that will create a necessity, but giving Lance a 5-year deal just feels like really risky business.
Going to close here completely off topic. I watched 5 minutes of the Olympics last night, hardly any, but in passing, the two-man bobsled was on.
Okay.
And I kind of like the bobsled and the luge, and when they do 80 miles an hour down the really slick surface,
yeah.
It's kind of neat to me. Because part of me goes, you're crazy. Because I always wonder, this is not my point, is how do you learn to do that? Because to me, I would kill myself attempting to figure out how to manipulate it in that way to be able to do that. And I know you're not going 80 miles an hour when you first start, but still, I'm surprised there aren't more head and neck catastrophic injuries as you try to begin to learn how to bobsled or luge. But
yeah, it looks awfully dangerous to me.
Was it Herschel Walker that was trying to be, or was it an Olympian bobsledder or something?
Willie Gault, right?
Was it Willie Gault?
Hell, I don't know.
Somebody.
It may have been Herschel. He could have done anything he wanted.
Herschel's very athletic. So.
Like, what would happen if Herschel Walker dedicated himself for 4 years to becoming a curler?
Well, I mean, I still think anyone could dedicate themselves to becoming a curler in 4 years.
But being the specimen that he is.
But does that help you in curling?
I don't know. Would that change?
Can he sweep a little faster and harder than other people?
I'm asking, could he create more friction or whatever
because
of his speed and ability?
Well, I mean, I'm sure, yes.
Phrasing.
Yeah, it's fine.
What was your point, by the way?
Oh, yeah, hold on. Let me answer this first, okay?
Someone blowing up?
No, I'm pulling up the Herschel Walker thing.
Okay.
Hold on, let me unplug that. It looks like both of them. Let's see.
I'm almost positive.
Willie Gault and Herschel Walker.
Okay.
Both of them. Gault was a member of the, in 88, Gault was a member of the U.S. bobsled team in Calgary, and then Herschel was, let's see, then Walker tried out for and made the U.S. bobsledding team, first as a member of the four-man team, but later being switched to the two-man team for the 92 Albertville Olympics.
So Herschel Walker participated in the Olympics?
In the bobsled.
That's awesome.
You didn't know this?
No, that is really cool.
I think I told, yeah.
Like, if I had Herschel Walker on the podcast, the first thing I would start with now would be bobsledding.
Would it really?
Yeah, because he's talked about football to the point of it probably, there's nothing new he could possibly say.
Yeah, just quickly here. Walker had a desire to compete in the Winter Olympics in Albertville, France, and U.S. bobsled coach Jim Hickey wanted the 6'1" running back to be part of his team. Walker had one small problem. He was still playing football. In the 1991 NFL regular season, Walker rushed for 825 yards and 10 touchdowns, but the Vikings didn't make the playoffs. Luckily, Walker was granted the extension to try out for the team after the regular season ended, and a few weeks before competition, he was named to the two-man bobsled team. With his partner, Brian Scheimer, the duo finished 7th in the final standings, only 0.7 of a second away from claiming gold. Even though Walker didn't get to stand on a podium, he was still the first NFLer to ever compete in the Winter Olympics while he was still playing. So, hold on a second. This dude played an NFL season, then as soon as the season ends, goes and tryouts for the Olympics in bobsled and makes the team.
As
how bad would that piss you off if you're like a career bobsledder and I can't make it and Herschel just walks in off the football field?
But again, this is where, and I'll give credit where credit's due since we were telling earmuffs for Jeffrey. As Jeffrey Wright always says, we're not all made the same. I mean, the concept of we're all created equal is cute.
Good in theory.
And it's nice. I mean, it makes you feel good and warm inside. But it's not true. It's
Herschel had a leg up.
Yeah, two legs, some hips, a torso, chest, shoulders, and a neck up. He was just kind of made differently.
10 touchdowns in the 91 regular season, and then, oh, by the way, let me go make the Olympic team. Just in the bobsled.
Catch the flight. A little sore.
Jeez. Your point stands. Yes, Herschel Walker could be an Olympic curler if he'd like to be an Olympic curler.
He could do whatever the hell he wanted to do. Seriously, I mean, he's one of those guys. There's a handful of them that they're just so athletic that they could do whatever the hell they wanted to do.
Kind of a gimmick, though, from the bobsled coach, isn't it? Or did he actually think Herschel was just the best dude because he's so damn fast and strong?
He's fast and strong, and so much of the bobsled is the first 20 meters or something.
Yeah, pushing and getting in the thing and all that.
You know, he didn't. I mean, a gimmick would be, you know, calling one of the Kardashians or something. Hey, come push the sled.
When it comes to athletic feats, Herschel's not exactly a gimmick.
No. So, I mean, it's like.
Okay, my point being, last night, so I'm watching the two-man bobsled, yeah. And it's the finals, and Canada is running last.
Okay.
And they finish, and they tie Germany. They both had the same time down to the 1/10 of a second or 1/100 of a second, and they both claimed gold.
Okay.
It's a cool moment. Germany came over, like, they all hugged together. They all win gold. Nobody wins the silver, and then somebody won the bronze.
Shouldn't they have had overtime?
Well, I don't need overtime. Just move the clock out more decimals until someone wins. Do we like the tie, or should we not move the decimal point till we get an answer here?
What would be better is that now you're guaranteed at least silver.
Oh, you're going to make them go run again.
Yeah, have a run.
They both get one more run.
A sled off. Would you not watch the sled off?
If I've already watched this far, I'm pretty committed at this
point.
You're
locked into the sled off, right? I mean, would you rather watch that, or would you rather watch them when they go to the damn ice dancing, which is, like, to me, looks exactly like the ice figure skating. That's when somewhere when they went to ice dancing last night, I started flipping and I found a documentary about Air Force One and I spent the rest of my time watching that.
It was American too.
I never got back to it. Just that plane's cool.
Just
by the
show
way.
Me the 1/1000th of a second. That's all I want.
Know, have a sled off. Everybody here's my example.
Okay.
Here's my example. You could be watching Oregon State and Arizona on a Saturday night, they're both 4-6. You're like, I'm bored. I'm drinking. I'm about to go to bed. But they go to overtime. You watch the overtime. If they go to a second overtime, you might be starting to get pissed off, but you watch because you know I can't go to sleep because I got to see who won that game.
The good comparison is that I couldn't give two craps about soccer, but a shootout or penalty kicks, we're in.
You're watching penalty kicks.
Yeah.
You're watching in hockey. You're watching a shootout.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. It's fine. I don't like the tie.
I know. So you have a sled off. You don't want to go to, well, they won on the eighth decimal point.
Hey, I need more gold medals over here.
I don't want all the hugging and stuff. You're going to get the sled off, and if you lose, you get the silver.
You know, it would be a national embarrassment if we were getting our heads kicked in the Summer Olympics, but no one seems to really care that we're not faring overly well in the Winter Olympics right now.
Well, I read Dan Wilkins' story. It's because we don't have socialized medicine. That's all it is. We don't have universal health care.
Yeah, that's why Norway is winning in skiing right now.
It has nothing to do with the fact that you can walk outside and ski and skate your way to the market.
We always do okay, typically. This is one of our worst efforts, but no one seems to care.
No.
Sort of, because we don't do well in figure skating. People, for some reason, like American figure skating, but...
I mean...
Like, if our runners were screwing it up and our gymnastics team sucked, people would be kind of pissed off.
I mean, when I was a kid, you watched figure skating.
If our swimmers weren't winning.
I guess. When I was a kid, you watched the figure skating because when they would twirl around and stuff, the skirts would fly up. But now, with the internet, you don't need that anymore.
So it was either that or flipper, so you had to do something.
There wasn't much choice. And now, I mean, like, who was the skater? Katarina Witt?
Yeah.
I mean, she was hot.
That was fairly recently. I mean, your time.
It was a long time ago.
Katarina Witt was?
I think.
No, Katarina Witt. It was in the 90s or Katarina Witt was. No, maybe I'm wrong. Never mind.
She's
sorry.
She's in the 80s, wasn't she?
I'm sorry. I think you're right.
When did she skate?
Okay, I pulled up her Wikipedia page, but it's not in English, which is kind of a problem. I don't read whatever this is. I think you're right. I'm wrong.
I wonder where she is today.
I apologize. I'm looking at Wikipedia in different languages.
She's 52, so she was...
No, it was a while then. I'm sorry. You're correct. I got her mixed up with somebody.
I think she was 88 Olympics.
I think like the first one I remember was like Christy Yamaguchi.
Yeah. Katarina Witt and I, we broke up after our one-dimensional, one-sided relationship.
Oh, she was German?
Okay. I think so.
Yeah.
I moved on.
84 and 88 Olympics.
Yeah, 84, that's about right. That would have been prime time.
Sarajevo.
That would have been a prime time to have a one-dimensional.
I don't see them putting the Olympics in Sarajevo anytime soon.
She was gorgeous, though.
You'd already moved past your figure skating fantasy by the time we got to Kerrigan and Harding and all the...
Yeah,
the kerfuffle of the... Okay.
Yeah, you can see how that might have inspired a 14-year-old.
That's fair. Okay, anyway, I'm done. Socialized medicine, Norway, Olympics, bobsled, Herschel Walker, the close to today.
I mean, tell me where else you can get this except in Jackson. And the Utah Jazz, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
All right, coverage at rebelgrove.com, Memphis and Ole Miss today. Missouri plays Ole Miss in basketball as well. So talk to you tomorrow.